Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
So I have a little bit of a confession. For most of my adult life, I believed that around the world, borders didn't really matter. The Berlin Wall fell when I was in college. Europeans decided, you know what, let's just use one currency. Every country made what it was good at and imported the rest. Now, this thing had a name, globalization. And now, a lot of people think it's falling out of fashion. How? And what's the next fashion? Our next guest has a book exploring all this. Rana Faruhar is a columnist at the Financial Times, and her book is Homecoming, The Path to Prosperity in a Post-Global World. Rana, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So your book lays out a long story to this. It starts out in the 1930s. And, you know, I remember from my history that countries were not getting along very well in this period. They were taxing each other's imports. They were protectionist. The U.S. was kind of the chief protectionist. How did we get from there to the beginnings of what some of us call a globalized world?
So it's a great question. The roots of the system were actually born in the 1930s in Europe, and it was because countries were at war. They were between the two great wars, and they were looking for ways that they could prevent each other from going back to war with one another and you know, destroying the continent. And the ideas that they came up with were really about connecting global business and global capital across borders. And when I say capital, I mean money. You know, it was about capitalists getting together and, you know, making each other wealthier. And then money, goods, people, they're all free to travel across borders, and they're always going to end up where it's most productive for them to do so. And all boats are going to rise, and we're all going to get McDonald's, and it's going to be great.
Speaking of McDonald's, right, the journalist and author Tom Friedman was so enamored by this that he posed this golden arches theory, right? The idea that countries were so connected that any two countries that have McDonald's would never go to war. I mean, does that kind of put a picture on peak globalization when it was maybe the most in fashion?
You know, I think it does. I mean, I love Tom, but that book was definitely of its moment, which, you know, was written in 2005. And between 2003 and 2007, right before the financial crisis, the world as a whole grew faster than ever before. And the idea was that globalization, American-style globalization, was going to make everybody freer. The truth of the matter is that that theory stopped working about the time that the former Yugoslavia fell apart. And as we now know, being richer and doing more trade doesn't necessarily make you freer. So these ideas that prices were going to go down, stocks were going to go up, everybody was going to be richer and freer, well, they created a lot of wealth, but they also created a lot of global inequality.
And is that when this kind of shiny promise of globalization started to show its weak spots? You know, first of all, you know, this gap between the super rich and the rest of us really widened.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I was saying, you got in the last half century more wealth created at a global level than ever before, but in almost every single country in the world, inequality grew dramatically. And that's down to the fact that there was always a flaw in the thesis. And the flaw was that money, capital, and capitalists traveled much freer and much faster and much more nimbly than either goods or people. And that favored the top 1%. But in many countries, particularly countries like the U.S., where labor is a lot more expensive than it is, say, in China or Vietnam, people lost their jobs, and the country as a whole lost its industrial commons, its ability to make things, which we really saw come full force during the pandemic.
Now, for a moment, Rana, if I can just kind of challenge the premise here. Right? A lot of people have been writing the obituary of globalization for years. We're still very connected digitally around the world. I can still invest my money in, I don't know, a mining company in Australia. Is globalization really dead?
Well, I would say it's evolving, and it's evolving fast. I think that trade in capital, you know, the money flowing across borders, is also going to continue, but we may see different currencies start to develop. The Chinese are developing their own digital RMB. That's their currency, and they want to use that to trade with their trading partners. So even though the dollar is the global currency, it could be that in the next 5 or 10 or 20 years, we're going to see a much more heterodox global financial system.
But, you know, in economics, there's always the on the other hand question. And so I wonder, you know, if there are dimensions of cost to more localized producing. On one hand, you know, if more things are made by Americans with higher salaries, you know, perhaps the prices will go up. But I want to ask you, is there a risk that we can return to the 1930s where your book starts? Is that a risk?
It is. It's a risk that we could go back. But I don't think it would be because of the reasons that I've been sketching in my book. What I'm talking about are good reasons to make things more locally, not protectionist reasons, but smart reasons. The idea that innovation happens more quickly when you hub production and consumption more closely together. The idea that you can save a lot of carbon inputs and fuel inputs if you do things more locally. This is something that's gaining steam, and I expect it to. And I think also in terms of cost, you mentioned higher labor costs in the Western world, and that's true. But let's be honest, was cheap ever really cheap? You know, you look at a $5 t-shirt, and what you don't see is it may be made by child labor. And I think that we're kidding ourselves when you think that the way a $5 t-shirt is made is the same as the way a $20 t-shirt is made. I'd also add one more thing, which is that cheap stuff at Walmart never really made up for the fact that the price of things that matter, education, healthcare, housing, these are all going up at triple, if not more, the rate of overall inflation. So we need to move to an economy where we are creating not just a few high-end jobs and a bunch of low-end service jobs, but some really good jobs in between. And that's going to require a much more diverse economy and one that can make things.
Yeah. Rana Faruhar is a columnist at the Financial Times, and her new book is Homecoming, The Path to Prosperity in a Post-Global World. Rana, congratulations on the book, and thanks again for talking to us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.